Forest Oral History Project, 1984, Blue Mountains, New South Wales. This tape forms part of a collection of recordings on the oral past. Each tape contributes to a developing story of life in the Blue Mountains. It is understood that the Blue Mountain City Library will, at the discretion of the librarian, allow students and researchers, or any other interested persons, to listen to the tapes and read the summaries and use them in conjunction with their research or other educational purposes. It is further understood that no copies of the tapes may be made and nothing can be used from them in any published form without acknowledgement of the original source. This tape is being made by, who was born in 1892 and now is the oldest living resident of the town of Blackheath.
Yes, I came here when I was just before I was five. I've been here ever since. Oh, I've been away at work, you know, different times, but this has been my residence ever since then.
Since you were five. And where did you live until you were 5 years old?
Pardon?
Where did you live until you were five?
On the river, Cox's River.
In the Canoe.
That's where I was born.
Yes.
I was only 3 months old when my father died. I never knew him, of course, but the farm, there were so many of us. I am the youngest of 16.
Yes.
I had seven brothers and eight sisters. And I couldn't make a deal with when father left on the farm. So mother came up here and went to work. And I understand there was four, if not five of us. She had to try and manage to keep us somehow, which was pretty hard those days.
What did you do? How did you manage to make ends meet? With
We all managed to get to work, even if we didn't get much money. We got a living and something to eat. A lot kept us going till we were old enough to get and make a bit of work or get a bit of work of some kind.
And before you went to work, you went to school at the primary school here in Blackheath.
Yes, I went to school in Blackheath.
What years, can you remember the years that you attended that school?
Oh, I'd be about nine, between 9 and 10 when I left school and went to work. So I might have had the best part of 2 years beyond that,
right,
ahead of that.
Can you remember any particular incidents or characters from your school days that stick in your mind still?
Not a lot, no. I know that the headmaster was very hard on me.
What was his name?
Mr. Laws, Bill Laws.
He was hard on you, was he?
Oh, well, see, we used to buy heavy boots. Mother couldn't buy, and we used to buy blucher boots then for 3 shillings a pair. And I used to march in them, and he was always on my back for making a noise.
Oh,
but those things happen, don't they?
They do, they did.
The living was very cheap then, though. She was just £2 or £4 a week, she could live well. Because you should buy bread for a penny eight and a loaf. You should buy butter for about 11 pence a pound, and all that sort of thing.
So you left school when you were 10? Years old. Did you leave school when you were 10 years old?
Yes, I'd say no more than 10. I went to work for a dairyman down at the bottom of the lane here.
What was his name?
Bill Stotchberry.
Bill Stotchberry?
Yes, he had a dairy there, and I used to deliver milk on the bicycle, and he'd done the cow.
Right. You had the big, the milk cans on the back of the bicycle, didn't
you? No, I had one each side of the handle.
Oh, yes. Yes, the old milk containers.
Right about your garden.
And you used to drive around to the house and ladle out the milk as you came.
That's it. Milk was all served then, like by the pint.
Yes.
And no bottles or anything like that.
No containers at all.
No.
Now, there was all the food was sold in bulk in the early part, wasn't
it?
Oh,
a lot of sold. We could buy a lamb for 3 shillings ready just to eat in the butcher's then.
The whole lamb?
The whole lamb is a buy for 3 and 3 and 26 cents.
Gee.
And I was dying, well, to die you'd buy that for me and the church, I suppose. Yes, yes. Well, more, much more.
But easily, yes. Mm. What other kind of work did you do in the township of Blackheath?
I think I've had a garden at everything that was dying.
Up until the time you were married, what kind of jobs were available to
well,
you?
Well, I was driving the bullock team when I got married.
And where did you work with that team?
I was in Meadowlaw.
Mm-hmm.
I was carting timber to the mill in Meadowlaw. I went down to cut timber for the mill, to fall the trees and get them ready for the teams. And one of the bullock drivers left and they said, well, you'd have to take the team. So that's what happened. That was my first experience with the bullock team.
Now when you worked the bullock teams, did you go down to the valley and camp out?
They only go by talking to them. You don't have any...
No, do you camp out?
Did you camp out when you were working the bullocks?
Hmm?
When you were logging the timber, did you go down into the bush and live there?
Yes, lived there. My and the wife lived in the house free. And we had no friends, of course. We had a mattress on 4 kerosene tanks.
Yeah.
Slept in that, and I made a few little cabinet things out of the boxes. And yes, we lived where the doctor owns it now. Our local doctor owns it. The owner of the bullock teams owned that property.
What was his name, the man who owned
Mr.
the bullock?
Mr. Billy Ward.
Right.
They had the sawmill, Ward and Brooks had the sawmill. And we used to cart the logs in there and there was four of us, four bullock teams going. We'd only get out of the logs each day or every second day, bring them into the mill. Then from that on, I came back up here and I had a dairy of my own for several years. Now I got messed up with a young horse. And then I had to dispose of it. I couldn't handle it. I couldn't walk for 12 or 18 months. And,
what happened with the horse?
He bolted at me in the bush.
Oh.
And I had a, he was snigging, I had a snig chain, a hook went in his foot and took me. And broke some ribs and tore the foot nearly off, of course.
Mm.
Well, when I went to hospital, there were four doctors had a look and they said, it's got to come off.
What was the thing that you had on your foot?
The hook of the snig chain that you put around the log, you see, to pull it.
I see. You used to guide that.
Yeah, the hook went in there and just tore
it. Tore all the sinews.
Gee, that was a nasty accident.
But my doctor said he thought he could manage to mend it, which he did. And I've still got it.
Where were you when that happened? Down in the valley?
Out in the bush out here between here and Mount Victoria.
And how did you get back to...
Oh, well, I had a mate working with me. He'd gone up with a load of wood. We were cutting wood for the baker at the time. And I carried and he came back and of course and then I had to lay down on a rock and keep my foot off his bleeding so
yes.
Then he got the doctor out so that had
happened. Gee.
And a long time and 19 weeks in hospital and never turned over. He had a pretty bad bump of that. But that meant that I had the dairy was so run down that I had to get rid of it then. And then I went to whatever work I could get, which was very little. And I went and made my own bullock team. I had to cart them to the local mill here.
What
after,
year was that?
1942. Mm-hmm. There's a photo in there of a bullock team. In the small photo of
your own team?
Yes, my own team.
How many bullocks were there in the
average
team?
12 in this one.
Only 12?
Mm.
What's the biggest one that you've ever had?
22 I landed at the drive and I went to Dungog for a couple of years up north. They advertised for bullock drivers. I went up there and done 2 years. But they were big bullock, big teams, 24, 26 and so on.
Why did they need those, that number of bullocks?
Oh, well, they...
Big logs?
They all had big teams. The owner of the mill had big property, and he bred his own bullocks. And we had the job, of course, breaking them in, some of them occasionally. You wanted young ones, which is no trouble at all with bullocks. Not when you got broken in ones.
Mm. They just follow the lead of the older ones.
Oh, you just yoke them up and hook them in with the others, and they land in no time.
Mm.
Much quicker than horses. I've had both. I had horse teams for years. To go to Clower and in the winter and do a bit of, or in the spring and do a bit of wool and wheat carding.
From and here, you used to take your bullock team to Clower?
Oh, no, I had a horse team there. Okay. Sold the bullocks and bought the horses. And I went to Clower then, and used to do that in the spring and come back in and do the logs in the winter time.
Mm.
And then I went to work on the government experimental farm with the horses at Clara, which I should have never left because they wanted to keep me permanently. But my wife wouldn't go up there, so that ended up.
Well, that was a shame.
Hmm. And that's the sort of thing that happened.
How old were you when the First World War broke out? You would have been in your
20s. I'd be 20, about 19 or 20. 1914, wasn't it?
Yes.
1914, 18, that's mm-hmm. right. I wanted to go to the war with my brother's boy. Wife wouldn't have it. Of course, the wife could stop you then. But I think that was wise. To stay at home because the brother's boy, he was away for 5 years. And that's a long time to be away from a family, isn't it?
It is.
Well, from a wife. No family, well, only one then. Had one little girl. She's got six sisters.
Can you remember the effects that had on him being away for 5 years and then being... Mm. Can you remember if that had a big effect on him? 5 years of being out of town, being at the war?
Oh, I think it would have an effect on you up to a point, although it didn't with my cousin.
Didn't change him, no.
He had very little money they saved. They had to leave 2 shillings a day to bank, and the rest of it was 4 shillings a day. They got that. But he had that 2 shillings a day for at least 4.5 or 5 years.
Mm.
And he had that money, and that would be, if you had £100, you had a nice little bit of money those days.
Yes, it went a lot further, didn't it?
Today it wouldn't be worth anything.
Mm. And what about the depression during the, the stock exchange crash?
We had a bad depression here. You couldn't get any money. You got a ration ticket. You went to the butcher and the grocer and got what they allowed you to have, according to your family.
Yes.
That's how you'd get that, and nothing else. Yeah. You couldn't get tobacco or anything like that to smoke. Unless if you did, you'd cut out something else.
Yes.
Well, you couldn't do that because you only wanted to eat.
Mm. Did you get work during the Depression? Did you find work here?
No, I did. They gave us work later on, and they gave you work then according to your family the same. And I worked on the roads then with a horse and dray. And that kept us going.
There was 10 in the family, 10 of us.
Gee, you would have had to be given.
Kept on permanent because of the family. See, I had a family then.
Mm.
And there was enough of my family to keep me, which only finished up at about £3.10 a week. But it was feeding a horse too.
Yes.
And still as we could live on it, all right. We could pay rent anywhere here. We get a house for 10 shillings. Actually, we had a house for a lot less than that, even in Tisford.
Mm.
We had the club house over the line for 12 in Tisford. I think we were in there for about 10 years. When we came here, we've been here 48 years in this old place, and still don't own it. I could have owned it, but when Mum was alive, she said, no, I might get some, make some money and get something better. But that didn't happen.
Still here.
In fact, I could safely say that we're better off today on the pension than ever I was before.
Well, that's good to hear.
Only that I worked on the electrification of a railway for nearly 4 years. And that was good money. After 18 and 20 and 52 pound a week. Well, that was big money then, the most money ever I got was there. While that lasted, we done well.
It's good to know that you're comfortable now, though, because you've been through some fairly difficult times, I'd say.
The pension is good. See, we both get a pension and it makes it easy, and my rent's small. I only got to pay $20 a week.
That's good.
Which is good.
Mm.
And until... It wouldn't be 12 months ago, would it? But they charged me $20.
Mm-hmm.
$9 a week I was paying up to them. So
that was helpful, wasn't
they're
it?
Good people. Mm-hmm. I own these two places. And he said, well, you've always been good. And he said, you never stop there while you lived. So then 12 months ago they said that, but I knew it wouldn't pay the rates. So they asked me to pay $20 for them.
Mm.
But even that is quite all right today.
Mm.
See, our pension now, my pension is $188 a fortnight. That is $178 a fortnight. I get my allowance for that rent, $10 a fortnight.
Mm.
So that makes it a bit cheaper still.
That's good. Mm. Nice to have no money worries.
Isn't it?
At this stage?
Oh, we have no money worries.
No, we don't have anything.
No,
that's why
you haven't got any money worries.
No, we pay as we go.
Mm. Good
money. We had a lot of money worries in our time.
Mm.
You'd have debts to pay when you did get a few shillings. She'd have all the money, she got through all that.
Can you remember the effect that the Second World War had on life in the town of Blackheath?
Mm.
Can you remember some of the effects that the Second World War had on your life in this town?
Oh, I don't think so. I think it even made it better. In a way, there was more work. We're different, I think we only had about 10 or 12 soldiers went from here. But those jobs came in handy for other people. And things seemed to get a little better from then on.
You worked. Small arms factory.
Oh yes. How long were you down at the small arms factory?
Nearly 4 years there.
What kind of work did you do there?
Oh, cutting steel for the different portions of the guns. Cutting for the power saw. That was our job in the steel saw. Well, I didn't want to go to the factory. I had a contract for timber. And I had the horse team, and I wanted a man, and I went to the timber to get, I had to go to the Baroo to apply for a man to help me. And I said, you don't want a man, you go to the factory. And that was that, that was all about it. I didn't go for a month, and the police come and said, well look.
There's work.
That was all about it.
And after 4 years you left there. Was that because the war finished and it closed down?
They didn't want to let me get out then. I still had work, plenty of work, and I still had my horse team. And I said, well, I'm doing it. I said, well, we'll bring you back. I was out for 2 months and they sent me where to go back. And I said, well, I'll go back and see what can be done. I went in and saw my boss and he said, no, I won't give you clearance. He said, go and see the industrial officer. If he gives you clearance, what am I doing? So I went down to the office and seen him. And I said, whether you give me a clearance or not, I'm going. Oh, well, he said, you won't get a job without a clearance. I said, I've got my own job. He said, what is it? And I said, cutting timber. And he said, is timber really essential? I said, to you. That's how I got out. Mm-hmm.
That was good.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of timber is the best kind of timber?
Logs that we were cutting here was mainly mountain ash. Only mountain ash that is any good. There's plenty of it now, but you can't cut it, of course. It's all sanctuary and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Those days you could cut it where and how you like. I took a contract for cutting 5,000 or 6,000 feet of wheat to make clothes feet. You wouldn't believe that, would you?
Clothes feet?
Well, I had a factory in Sydney and a man came to me and he said, you're used to the bush and we want timber to make clothes feet. Will you get us a sample? So I got him a small log and give it to him. He took it to Sydney and they tested it. So that's what we want. So they gave me a contract then of 6,000 a week. 6,000 super feet in the log to be sent every week. So I begin to make money then. Mm-hmm.
How long did you work on the pigs?
I must have done several years. I went back to a bullock team and they took their mill to Hampton and I went out there with the bullocks. Was carting every ash there to their mill and stuff for years, and then the wife went into hospital. She was in there and I came home and worked in the factory while she was in hospital. That was for some time. Eventually sold it. Helped these people the bullock team for their own use.
Oh.
And went back to different works then. At the time, there was one of our neighbours here. Two boys were playing at Lake Midlow. One of them was put into the dam and was drowned. And they couldn't manage to find him at all. And I had...
Was that Johnny Robinson?
Mm.
Johnny Robinson?
Mm. Yeah.
Yes, I've heard about him.
Mm.
He drowned when he was about 9 or 10.
Mm. Yeah, Dad could have found him.
Did you?
I was working at the park and I had a sort of a presentiment that I could find him. Because I knew what the dam was. I knew it before they dammed it. The timber was just falling in the bottom.
Right.
So I took my own hook and rope. Went out on the boat with the policeman and one of the local men. Was out there for 8 hours and I got him. Found him in 30 feet of water. And about enough. That was it. The presentment I got must have been good.
Yes, you were the one to
find him. I got him with a grappling
hook.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
frequency.
I know.
Yes, hooked any little clothes and about enough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was it.
Did you have any other incidents in your life where this presentiment helped you out?
No, I don't think I can remember of any. Never had any of it that I know of.
Mm.
I've done most things. I've spent many winters down the valley rabbiting, stuffing rabbits. And that was reasonable money. You could make 15 or 16 shillings a night.
Selling rabbits for food?
Between working nearly all night and all day, of course.
Yes.
But you do that in the winter months, it was no good in the summer. I used to do that. Nothing to get 60 pair of rabbits a night. And we were getting something's happening a pair of them. Now they have, I think, about $1.50 or something.
Yes.
Each, not a pair.
That's right. Mm-hmm. What animals did you notice in the early days down in the Megalong Valley and in the bush around here that you don't see these days?
Mm.
Are there any animals that you saw those days?
Oh, there's no animal in my county. There's kangaroos and wallabies in the valley.
Many wombats at all?
Oh, there's quite a few of them. I've seen up to 15 or 16 in a mob.
Gee.
In some of the cultivated paddocks, they come out at night.
The kangaroos in mobs?
Yeah, the possum is a pet.
There seem to be all sorts of kangaroos and little scrub wallabies. They all tend to go together. But the kangaroo's a big fellow.
Mm.
There was nothing to see. I think a local doctor telling me he's feeding nearly as many now as cattle. He won't shoot them, of course.
Oh.
But you cannot suppose to shoot them.
No. Well, he'll go on feeding them then.
Oh, there's a lot of feed.
I've seen what they do to places, yes. They're worse than the cattle and the sheep.
That's it. Yes, they never stop eating when they eat their own eat.
And they flatten it as they go.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
It seems that there was quite a large Chinese community in Blackheath. There was, in the early part of the century, there was a large Chinese community.
There was a lot of Chinese. There's about 8 or 9 of them here. They own the golf links that is now.
Yes.
They used to go cabbage, and mainly cabbage and cauliflower, and send them to Sydney by the truckload.
Oh, we
carted them in as well as the Chinamen. They used to come in and we cart them in as well. Cabbage and cauliflower.
8 Chinamen planted enough cabbages to give you work, did they?
Well, 2 of them had a run round the town here. One used to do Mount Victoria and Blackheath, and one would do Medlow and a part of Blackheath.
Can you remember their names?
Charlie Lee was one of them. Ah, Wong, I think, was another one.
Sounds
he
Chinese.
Went to the Valley Farm and worked for Mark Foy then. They were, had 6 Chinamen gardening in the first farm in Meganon.
Oh, yes.
Mark Foy owned that property and they used to send that up by wire route. Up to Medlow.
That's right, up to the hydro.
And send the garbage down to feed the fish.
Oh, did they? Really? Good system.
Didn't they have one down the Leap Road, a garden? When we were kiddies, we used to go there.
That's right, Tommy owned Singh. He had the garden opposite that little shop at in Gilbert Street. All that was, there was the one hotel, the Ivan, that was there then. And they had the garden all the other part of it. And he used to go to church. I remember we used to go to church and he'd go to Baptist church and take his little Chinese daughter and put a sovereign in the plate every Sunday. We've done a fair amount of coach driving. This is one of the local men, Bob. I do coaches for him for a few, 2 or 3 years.
Where to?
Oh, mainly around the site. There's no motor cars then. People come by train, you take them to the site. And occasionally you go to the cave. You get a load to the cave.
How long would that trip take from Blackheath?
Oh, you'd go out one day and back the next. But you change your horses halfway. At Hampton, you get a change of horses. You go to the caves and back to Hampton tomorrow. Change your horse and come home again.
Good trip?
Good trip.
What kind of people used to come?
Oh,
to take
your friends, they were all classes. quite, oh, not many wealthy people, of course, but oh, quite good people at table. Very good, we never had any bother with them at all.
I suppose they would have all sung along as they went through the bush.
Well, they would perhaps still catch up load of people out, they might stay at the cave for a fortnight. Well, then as you take another lot out, you'd bring those back.
By the time you bring them back, they were all good friends.
Yes. Well, we didn't do a lot of that, Mr. Ross didn't. They had other coaches at Mount Victoria, they used to go daily. The Cooper's coaches.
Yes. I was speaking to Mrs. Ward, Florence Ward. She's the
yes,
daughter
sir.
Of Cooper.
And she was they'd go every day. Some of us are.
They'd change too at the halfway house. They used to change their horses too.
Oh yes, they used to change their horses. There were some fast drivers amongst those men. I see them going down Mount Victoria miles too fast to be safe. Not very many stories. From what I can understand, he was a very placid man. I know that he used to go to Cobar Garden, which is now to the book. But he said he'd see a fight or an argument perhaps every night. And he said he never seemed to be missing it. He was a bit of a peacemaker.
What was the town of Cobar like in those days? Hmm? What would the town of Cobar have been like?
Oh, well, it was just a mining town then.
Pretty rough.
Taking perhaps 5 months or 5.5 months to do a trip. But a bullet train might go from here up, and he'd split the oak billets and take them with him and sell them to the different bullock yards and make yokes for the bullock.
Oh, yes.
So that'd get him a bit of tucker perhaps, and that'd let him get his load and go through. No money till you delivered your load.
So you had to put the bill until the payout?
5.5 to 6 months. But mother said then the money they'd get would do them 12 or 18 months for that trip. And then things perhaps got a bit better. I know he and his brother, Uncle Lewis, they lost nearly all their bullocks in one night. They got drunk at a bad pool. And they got pleura, it's like a pleurisy in people. And his children nearly instantly. They had some trouble then. There was taking a couple from you and a couple of bullets from me and making up enough to pull them through.
How many did they lose in that one night?
Hmm?
How many bullocks died from that accident?
Oh, they died pretty quickly, they wouldn't say.
How many died?
Oh, I think Uncle Lewis lost all but two. Out of 18, I think he lost all but two.
What would a bullock have cost in those days?
Oh, about 3 to 5 pounds.
You lost a lot then?
I bought most that I made, I bought for £3. Bought them young, you know, and then bake them in. Odd times I swapped the young ones for a couple of big old ones to make the team a bit heavier, and that sort of thing. But you do all sorts of funny things to get going. And that. But, a great comfort bullocks to drive after. And no trouble to drive after horses. Horses are twice as hard to land. And twice as hard to break in. I've done a good bit of that, just heavy horses breaking. That's what. I used to think I could ride well enough, but I wasn't good enough. I used to hit the dirt too often.
They say that you can never say you're a good horseman until you've fallen off at least 7 times.
Oh, yeah. Where do you originally come from?
From Sydney.
Where?
From Sydney.
Oh, okay.
The Zigzag Railway. Do you have any recollections of the time you worked with the Zigzag Railway?
Well, I don't know about it. Oh, I went on as a labourer, but... I was only a fortnight there when I got a job as a carpenter. And I wasn't a carpenter because I had no ticket. But the boss said, "You don't know, I don't have to have a ticket here." Said, "I said, you better come."
And how long did you stay working there?
Oh, pretty much 3 years, I think. Well, about 3 years.
Oh, I think so.
I went till it was finished, anyhow. I only joined them here and went as far as this town. That's where I shouldn't have been. But, oh, as a carpenter, many days I wouldn't take a hammer out of my belt. Don't try to up in the shed just a
It's a hard life by the sound of it.
Oh, it was all like all government jobs. No way. There was a big piece of poetry written under my father's. That was by the oldest coachman in Katoomba, Harry Pittman. You got that in there?
Yes, I have.
Mm-hmm.
A genial soul was good Bob Duff. A faithful friend was he.
Mm-hmm.
His face was bronzed, his hand was rough, his heart was kind and free. It's a beautiful poem, isn't it?
Well, it's about 9 verses at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's quite a tribute to him.
Mm-hmm. I seem to be wanting all these old things to die, don't I? I went up here to write out that book there, up here. Several local people kept coming up and trying to find out what I knew to put in that book. Down to the farm, and my sister and two brothers were living there.
Down in the
Canadian
Valley?
I used to go down there and get work round about the farm. And I was only quite a lad. The blacks used to have a camp down the river. And old Bet came up and asked my sister that was on the farm for flour. Said, "I got no flour." So she got some flour and she wanted to take me down to the camp to have a look. So I went. And she said, "Would it have something to eat?" I said, "No, I didn't." But she gave me a piece of bandicoot. And it was just like rabbits. And I cooked that in the clay on the ground. Baked it in the clay on the ground. She'd tell you to look at something. She'd drink the gravy out of the...
What? And she'd drink the gravy out of the clay mould?
Yeah, out of the body of the little bandicoot.
Oh, I see.
She'd drink that.
Why did she tell you to look away? Did she know that you'd find...
Didn't want her to watch her drinking the gravy, that's right. But she gave me a taste of this kangaroo and the bandicoot, and this is quite all right, dude. The way they cook it so well. It's as white, you know, when they cook it. They have white pipes like you're cooking it. Make that real hot, red hot, and then there's always a treat to cook. The little animal I put in, that's all the flies I took it in. Mm.
How many blacks lived in the camp?
Oh, I think there was 10 or 11 of them. They used to come from Valley Grand up the river and have camps on the way up and down. They used to travel and stay a few weeks in one place, and a few weeks in another.
Just living off the land?
Yeah. And they had tents and bark huts. They'd build little bark huts.
How did they move all this gear? Did they have a wagon?
Okay.
Did they have a wagon to transport all the gear, or did they
they had horses. They used to pack horses. And
so, was it a black family?
Oh yes, two blacks. Little curly-headed kids. Very funny looking, they're very pretty kids.
Had they lived in this valley before the white man came?
Oh, they lived in Burrigarang, I think before the white man came. Then they used to come up the river when as the whites and then join in with the whites. In fact, they brought a cricket team to here, to Canimbra, to play cricket, all blacks.
Right.
They used to come up once a year and play cricket there.
When was that? When was the first time you can remember an all black
match? Well, I was only a boy, I suppose, about 15 or 16 or something like that. I can remember them coming up there and playing cricket.
It seems as though the people were less racist then than they are now.
Oh, you see. Well, the blacks were no trouble to anybody. They never had any trouble with it. They shoot kangaroos, of course, and that sort of thing. Because there were no rabbits then. Rabbits, I don't know when the rabbits first came, but there was no rabbits in those days. A few hares and plenty of wallabies and kangaroos. That's what they lived on. Make their own bread out of something. And you could get them all, what they call wild bread. Something in the bush that they used to dig out of the ground and cook it and eat it. They called it some sort of bread.
Did you ever share many meals with the Aborigines?
Oh no, I only went a couple of times down. I didn't have a meal, I just tasted what they had. I didn't fancy the meal. But still they were clean, they were really clean. Quite clean, and
they mixed in and the people just accepted them?
Oh, you see, they used to come up and talk to my sister and the brothers. They'd come up and talk to us, I'd go shooting. I'd have a gun and a muzzle out of you, run the child down the barrel and shoot her up.
And where did that family go to? When was the last time you remembered seeing that family around on the mountains?
Oh, that'd be, well, anything from, I'd be perhaps 13 or 14. That'd be back in, before, it might have been before 90. It would have been the 1890s, I think. They didn't stay much those times, another perhaps a few weeks, 3 or 4 weeks, one camp and they'd go back, you know. 3 or 4 weeks in each camp as they went down the river.
What did they do for money? Did they do odd jobs too?
Well, they never seemed to have any money, they didn't. If they did, they'd get a job at a farm, that's true. They wouldn't stay. They'd only work 2 or 3 weeks and they'd go. They'd get that bit of money. They only wanted flour and tea and a bit of sugar, that's all they did.
Just enough to get them on the way?
Yes, and they'd get most of that from different farmhands and give it to them. You know, they'd go and ask for a little bit of tea, or they'd give them a packet of it. Used to get tea in tins, then big tins. Mm-hmm. They'd give them half a tin of tea, something like that.
There was the story about the an old Irish remittance man by the name of Murphy, who lived down at the end of Hattiel Road.
Oh.
Jack Harris used to spend a bit of time with him when he was a small boy.
Oh, yeah.
I was wondering if you had any recollections of Mr.
No.
Murphy?
No.
Now, did you know he lived down the end of the road?
Oh, do you know?
Murphy?
Mr. Murphy.
Oh, I knew Mr. Murphy. Yeah, I didn't have anything to do with him, but I knew him. Yes, he lived well down the end of the road. I think that he had a sawmill. No, that was Wallace. And I was thinking of another one. They came from Clarence and down in the Walgan Valley. He came from there and that was Wallace and bought a place right out at the end of that hill. Would have probably built himself a bit of a hut. And he had a steam engine. His tummy had brought himself here with a big steam engine. And going up the road, it wasn't 2 or 3 wagons behind it. And then he had a wire rope down into part of the way into the gross. He was bringing up coal with his wire rope, an endless wire rope. Bringing it into the horse and cart and selling it to people around the town.
Mr. Wallace?
That's Mr. Wallace. Mm.
Did he stop in the town then, or...?
Oh, they took him away, I don't know why, but he had, I think, 7 guns. And he was no harm to anybody. Only he lived on his own. Whether he went a little bit mental or not, I don't know. But somebody said he was firing the guns. And he said he was. He said, I've wired them. Occasionally to try them. But I took all these guns and took them away. Whatever happened, I don't know. Possibly was a little bit mental, I don't know. But he was a fairly old man.
Can you remember any stories that were in town at the time that the anthropologist and archaeologist was lost?
No,
Mr. Child.
I couldn't say that I didn't remember any of it.
No. You must have been at the other end of town at that time.
Well, most of my time I was in the bush away from home, and you don't get much news that way, do you?
No, you wouldn't.
It was a proper bush, isn't it?
There's not many of them left these days. Proper bushmen. You said you had three brothers-in-law who went to the war in South Africa, the Boer War.
Boer War, actually, married three of my sisters, I did. There was Billy Dale, Mick Boyd, and Scofield.
How long were they gone?
Oh, I don't know exactly, but they were quite a while.
Can you remember any of their stories when they came back?
I don't remember much of them. Mick Boyd went to the back to the First World War as a bandsman.
Oh yes.
He went back as a bandsman and spent his time there.
You saw two wars then?
Well, he hasn't. He's not been dead many, I suppose, 7 or 8 years. He died there. But my sister, the younger sister, she died at about 38. And the family of three boys and a girl, didn't it?
What did she die from so young?
That I couldn't tell you. I just couldn't tell you what happened. She was just a bit older than me. I'm the youngest of the lot.
One of my sisters died at 23 too.
From?
She had three in family. Two boys and a girl.
What did she die from?
She had a blood complaint. And in those days, they didn't know how to treat it. If they got it now, they'd know how to treat it, but they didn't know how to treat it when she had it.
In the early part of the century, many people came to Blackheath because of tuberculosis. They came here for the climate.
They did. They used to come in trainloads one time to Blackheath. Holiday time, they had to come by train, there was no other transport. And you see, there's been nothing to have 10 or 12 coaches at the railway taking them to the different sites and to their different homes. There was three horse proprietors here, Robinson, McCall and all. And they all had McCall had about 16 horses, Ralph had about 18, and Billy Robertson had 6. Well, they all had churches those days. Mm-hmm. Used to have to go out at night sometimes to the night train with a pair of horses. It wasn't very pleasant in the rain.
One of the things that we find keeps cropping up in stories about the Blue Mountains are the stories of bushfires. What was the most extreme or severe bushfire that you can recall ever occurring in the mountains? The most dangerous bushfire you ever experienced?
The bushfire here, it was
there. Oh, 1905, I think.
And what happened then?
Oh, and it came through the valley and burnt most of it and burnt a big lot of Katoomba and part of Lula.
Where were you at the time that the fire came through?
I must have been away. I'd only be a bit of a kid then, you know. I haven't been possibly here. I'd be about 94, 95. My uncle had a little farm down there. He was bad there.
What was his name?
Uncle John Duff. He His farm was burnt out. Mrs. Dad's Shaw, Mrs. Kenny Shaw owns it now. I've been several owners, of course. And he was a big man. I remember he got himself into trouble. He had a bullock team, and of course he was carting wool up here. And he was short of a bullock, and he yoked a cow up. And they wouldn't allow it. So he had to dispose of it.
The bullocks wouldn't allow it.
Yeah, the jokes they used to do when they were young. When all these men used to get together. I tied a horse. About the horse you put in the harness backwards or something?
Oh, yeah, but I don't know. Mm. They used to have meetings at the, where the big hall is. The alderman was a municipality then. One of the old men used to come with a buggy. And we as young fellows was full of fun, of course. And we took his horse out and put the shafts through the pilot and put the horse in it on the other side of the fence. He came out and he couldn't make head in the tail. But still I found out eventually what happened. It was all clean fun, there was no harm done, you know.
No tarred and feathered a rat. And let it go. He told us all this when we were kids.
I think I told you about my brother and I been camped at Megalong with the bullocks. And one of his friends from Katoomba come to stay the night and found we'd been cutting wood for, I suppose, 3 months, knocking the stumps down and burning them. He went out and knocked one down, found a tree that with 100 sovereigns in it.
Lucky man.
And we'd been there all those months and lots of walk down that way.
Oh, I bet you kicked yourself. Yeah. Did he ever find out where the sovereigns came from?
Hmm?
Did he find out who put them there?
He took it to the police and they couldn't find the owner, but I think we would know the owner because McAveeny, old man McAveeny lived there and used to go away from home a few weeks at a time on a bender. And when he came home, she killed him with a tomahawk. And I think that's what happened, he used to plant his money.
Oh,
and
who killed him?
Property where that was done.
His wife killed him, did she?
His wife killed him with a tomahawk.
Gee. Did they have any children?
No, I think they did. But that was before my time. I only been told about her killing him. But it was, we were there when he got to Salvin. We both were driving the team, he killed him. That's how, and he took him to the police, but they gave him to him back. They couldn't find any trace of anybody owning him. So there must have been some honest policemen in the day.
Mm.
You wouldn't get it back today.
No, you'd be hard pushed, all right.
Yes, I had a brother, a policeman. He was a sergeant of police when he died. And he told me he got more money going to a pub at night and keeping them quiet than he got in his wages. He was at way up north, you know.
In New South Wales?
Mm. He finished up at Nara. He got to come home from there, retired and died in Epping.
Who's the most colourful character that you can remember living in Blackheath? Someone who sticks in your mind as being colourful?
Oh, it's quite a few characters here. Remember one that used to made it his job to pinch all the coppers. You know, there were coppers that people used to boil their clothes in.
Oh, yes.
He used to go around and get those and sell them. And
then tell them about the song he had. Hmm? The song.
Oh, he had a song made up to him with Arthur Rocky, pinching all the coppers in the town and all that sort of thing.
What was his name?
Arthur Rochester.
Oh, yes.
But the police picked him up eventually.
Everyone knew about it, did they?
They all knew, nobody bothered to put him in. He had them planted in the bush here if he was going to take them away with his horse and cart. He used to do a bit of dealing, but he caught up to it. But he used to pick up a load. I remember I had my horses in the paddock and his was his. And he'd come and ask me to take your horses out tonight, didn't he? I said, what's the matter, Arthur? He said, I've got a load of grain and groceries and all sorts coming in. I've got to get out of the town. All come from the local store. He went away before daylight and sold it. Between here and this town or something.
That was one character. Can you think of another? Or any others?
He'd be about the only one that I'd say was.
Were there any female characters in the place? Any personalities that you remember?
Oh, we had quite some good personalities here. You know, they had a nigger minstrel concert here. Our local baker, that field was quite good. Harry Boyd was another. Harry Johnson was another. I had a bit of a go myself. There was quite a few. They used to have a nigger minstrel concert once a 2 or 3 months, you know. Make some money for different people and the children. They were quite good. They used to get a good hearing, anyhow. The old dance hall, that's up on the fish shop in there. That used to be the old dance hall.
It seems that you used to make a lot of your own fun in those days.
Oh, well, you had to make your own fun. Go away, weekends cricketing with somebody. Moonlight pictures with the girls and boys. Take a coach load to Mount Wilson and Mount York and have the night. You know, best part of the night out and boil the billy and have a feed and that sort of come home. There was no pictures, the dancers were the only thing. I used to go dancing first. I think my wife was one of the best dancers in the country. She was well known as a dancer.
And you're both named Old-Time Wilson?
Mm. Old-Time dancing. Yeah. I used to emcee the square dance for them sometimes. And we had a ball here. We organised it. We had an old-time dance drum. And had it in the picture show. And we had two bands, an old-time band and a jazz band. Non-stop music for the night.
Oh, gee.
Yeah, it's quite a good night. We had to remove all the seats, all the chairs, to get the hall. And we found that when we did, it was covered with chewing gum. We had to get a shovel and scrape all that off to make the floor fit to dance.
And then they had to go back again for the next day, didn't you, for the pictures or something?
Hmm?
You had it bad, so they have it back, they put them all back the next day, didn't they?
We had to have them back. Next day for pictures on the Saturday, Sunday afternoon.
You had your work cut out.
The boys all joined in and marked them where they come from, of course, and just screwed them back there.
Oh, you had to screw them all down again?
Yeah, had to screw them down.
Gosh.
But they were in the rows of seats.
Yes,
yes. Well, I didn't get all the screws in, but we put all them in. But we had the picture producer, he came along, in fact, we invited him to the board. Had a ball for the hospital. And he said, I think we'd have to get you on a picture organisation. He said, you've got such a crowd here. But he said, I didn't think you could warrant such a crowd. About £100 clear on one night for the hospital. Had a ball and had supper, a good supper and everything as well. So it wasn't a bad effort.
They had 2 restaurants for the supper.
Mm-hmm. What year was this ball?
Hmm?
What year was this particular ball that you're thinking of?
Mm-hmm.
What year? What year was the ball?
Oh, where can I put it in there? Where can I tell you now?
Before the war? The Second World War?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yes, I think it was.
No, it wasn't. It was after
that. Oh, no, it couldn't have been.
It was after that.
It was after that.
Might have been in the 50s then.
Mm.
Yeah, in the big building you see now, that was a picture show.
Mm-hmm.
In the Leap Road. College store was adjoining.
That's right.
And that was the pictures there then. It was silent pictures, of course. No. First moving picture I saw was in Katoomba. We heard of it, and the wife and I went down and looked at it.
What was it?
Tiptoe
through the tube. And remember Maurice Chevalier was one of the singers there, I can remember that.
Ah, yes.
And Tiptoe Through the Daisies.
Tulips. Tulips.
Yeah, Tiptoe Through the Tulips.
Ah, yes.
I thought it was so beautiful. He's a king, of course, he's a good singer. Seeing something we'd never seen before.
Mm-hmm. Radio was a new invention too in your day, wasn't it?
Well, my wife never wanted to go anywhere on her dance.
Mm-hmm.
Because she danced, well, we used to dance for 3 nights a week between Mount Victoria and Springwood.
Mm-hmm.
You'd go out and dance a lot.
Did radio change your life much?
No, not a lot, I don't think, either. Yeah, the only thing she liked it for was what prices and everything. She didn't want to be bothered. She wouldn't have the coloured ones. She didn't want
radio.
It.
Radio. Radio change your life?
No, not that I know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so.
Mm. Now, a lot of people have said that they were completely out of touch with news except for the radio.
Mm-hmm. We never... Of course, we weren't very well educated either of us, so perhaps that had a different feeling to most people. Because my wife came from Colinnaby, way out west.
Mm. I know the town. Thank you very much.